Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean Coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.
This is Evan Dawson. If you like conversations that take you beyond the headlines, join me on Connections. Every day, we dig into the issues shaping Rochester with the people living them, researching them, even trying to change them. No hot takes, no shouting most of the time. Just real conversations that keep you involved in your community. Listen to Connections wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Dialed In. I'm Wade Reed.
I'm Aaron Pascucci.
And we are joined by our producer, Chris Lindstrom.
Hey, hey.
And tonight, we're drinking some coffee, if you can imagine that. Some coffee that Aaron brought us, and we're just going to talk a little bit about the origin of this coffee and just some stats and facts and fun things, and maybe why Aaron is interested in this coffee in particular and in this origin. But how's the week, gentlemen?
Oh, it's been a week already. I mean, I am got a lot going on, day job and otherwise. We were at Behind the Glass third anniversary last Friday,
right?
Which was awesome. I'll have to have you take a look at the little chapbook before you leave.
Oh yes,
turned out just awesome. It was a tremendous night. Yeah. I needed a night of positivity, and we recorded for, I don't know, hour 15, hour 20 that night. Just had a absolute blast, and it was this was at the new farmhouse table space,
yeah,
yep. In the glass walkway above the city, so we had the city in the background, and it was just awesome to be in the heart of the city and seeing the city while we were looking at all that stuff.
Absolutely
really cool, excited for the next steps at Golden Supply, and Lunchador, we've got a new show of two new shows starting very soon. So Rob Bell, who's part of Behind the Glass, is coming on with Plants and Beats.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doing lo-fi music and plant talk.
I was listening. It was putting me to sleep, though.
Oh, I mean, the first time...
It's lo-fi.
Yeah, the first time Matt listened to it, he's like, I fell asleep, dude. It was great.
That's great.
Then we have a library show, a book show starting in February or March.
Okay, sweet.
So excited about that, doing a Rochester's Book Club and more.
Rochester's Book Club. I love it. Mm-hmm. Matt, Behind the Glass, were there like a ton of alumni? Like, did everyone?
Oh, it was so busy. That hallway got jam-packed.
Wow.
We had a great selection of, you know, people from all the years. It was a very heartening night.
Was the chapbook like the main thing, or did they show like people's work from the past 3 years, or just from the past year?
Past year shown.
Yeah. Okay,
sweet. And then the chapbook has one page for every artist
I've seen 3 years. Different people posting out of it, and I'm like, yeah, I got to get my hands on one of
and
these.
And it just looks great. They did an amazing job, and you know, shout out to the whole team there. One of my favorite things to go do live out, and we'll probably be doing more live out with them during the time at Golden Supply starting in February.
Yeah, love it.
Golden Supply doing? What are they coming up with?
So they do... you know, kind of like heritage style apparel.
Right.
So they're hosting Behind the Glass from now on.
Oh.
Starting in February.
Yeah.
And Behind the Glass is also programming Farmhouse Table.
No,
so they're programming that separate, and then the openings are going to be at Golden Supply Co. from now on.
Gotcha. No, I found Golden Supply early on because they were dealing with salvaged denim.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. And it makes sense that you'd be into that since you're into watches.
Yep.
It's that is a Venn diagram that's complete overlap.
That's denim and watches.
Oh, dude, people who are into coffee, you can like almost like pinpoint random other things that they're into.
Oh, 100%.
The only thing I'll say is this. I originally got into it because a friend of mine started a business out in California. And so I bought one of his Kickstarter pairs. I still have that pair like 10, 15 years later. It's insane.
Yeah.
So I really want to start talking about this coffee because my first sip got me like shook in a weird way.
Nice.
Shook in a weird way.
All right. Aaron, tell us about the coffee.
So I, you know, after drinking my coffee, you know, a lot and realized that I have a thing for Mexican coffees. You know, it's just one of those ones. I see it and I know I'm going to like it, whatever it is. I think it's those darker, like brown butter and caramely flavors just sit really well with me. So I happened to see this one come up on Fellow Drops. Chris, thank you for exposing me to my new drug dealer.
Yeah, it's a problem. I mean, if you're, you know, you get just random coffees that show up in your text messages and it's like, how many bags do you want at blah, blah, blah price? I'm like, I guess one.
And you only have to press like a text button. It's like reply with A if you'd like this. It's way too easy.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing until they decide to sponsor our podcast.
Oh, yeah. Then we're all about it. I do like the program. A lot of the things are only for that program, which
I was going to say that's
an up and down about this aspect of it is that coffee is basically exclusively for Fellow.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's it.
I know. I tried to look up the Onyx and you can't even look it up on Onyx's website.
No.
There's just whatever Fellow tells you about it.
Yeah. So that's my understanding is anything on there is exclusive to Fellow. So a company like Onyx can do that and not be a big deal.
I mean, it could be Fellow's take on Aporia coffee.
Exactly.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I doubt
sometime
it.
Soon. Oh, wait, come on.
It's a lot of effort.
Yeah.
that might be more the thing.
So you got the Onyx one, which we'll be jumping into in a little bit.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way this unfolded was this Onyx one popped up, and automatically I was like, oh, I know that being one of the big heavy hitters. I have had rarely anything from them. And then it was a Mexican, and then it was a... This is the one from Oaxaca, which happens to be a preferred region as opposed to Chiapas or Veracruz, which I never see. So I was like, yes.
Veracruz you never see?
I haven't.
Well, that's interesting.
Maybe that can be our next.
I've brought a couple in.
I've probably drank one by you.
Exactly. Exactly. You didn't read the jar?
what's on the jar, Wade?
You didn't read the jar.
It's a very fine QR code.
Yeah, exactly. It's
etched into the bean.
Listen, if you spill the beans just right, they spell out the name of the coffee. That's how it works.
So anyway, I was like, yes, checks all my boxes. Let me get this randomly super expensive coffee. And then I needed to go pick up some coffee, and I went to Ugly Duck, and they've had this broadsheet. And I saw a Chiapas and I said, well, you know what? Maybe we should drink two Mexican coffees together and
here we are.
Banter like silly old coffee people.
So,
so that's what happened.
So broadsheet for those that aren't aware. So one, is definitely a quality shop. It's in Cambridge, Mass. I went there recently, just in the start of the year. I've been before to the roastery slash shop. And I've had stuff from there multiple times, both there and, you know, purchased through, I think, Fellow or somewhere else. So I've had it multiple times. Just a really high quality, roastery in the Boston area, where there is a bunch of good stuff, but there's just a whole bunch of not good stuff.
Yeah.
And you do sort of have to sort through the pile.
Yeah. It's a little harder to get to anything. But I do have to say, consistently good. Also love the bag design. It's very, very eye popping. You know, it's got those, you know, stunning,
like
citrus
oranges.
Fruits.
Yeah.
It just looks great. I love the design of what they've done. Cause I remember the old design. This is way more eye catching than what they used to do, which I was more generic.
Yeah.
So are you getting pecan pie and dates and nougat?
Well, now that you mentioned that, sure. My first thought was like bruleed marshmallow.
Yeah, I mean, it's brown sugary. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
It's kind of a what you expect coffee, I think.
Wade, what is your opinion on coffee? Because we have an opinion, right?
On,
and you shouldn't be afraid to say it.
On what?
I don't know. Where do you sit on Mexico in general? I know you bring in a lot of Guatemala.
No, I like Mexican things. Coffees quite a bit. I like the cleaner Chiapas types like this more so than like those dark chocolatey Oaxacans. The cocoa-y kind of rougher bodied stuff is interesting. And like, I think it gets a lot of people's attention. It's kind of the first time people go, oh, I like Mexican coffee, is something more like that. Or, I mean, you know, some of the more experimental stuff that they're doing now. So I've had yeast fermented coffees from Mexico that are really a little more interesting too. But yeah, I would say in the past, like a good clean Chiapas like this, with just a little more subtlety to the character, was mm-hmm. was one of my favorite coffees I've ever roasted. And that was actually with Joe Bean a long time ago, but I can remember it really, really well. So.
I mean, I can tell you that was probably one of the coffees that put Mexico on the map for me.
Yeah, I wish I could remember the name of that one. I don't remember the name exactly, but I do remember it was like a lot like this in its brown sugar kind of characteristics, but it also just had a lot of varied nuttiness and a real tight like lemon acidity that just sort of washed over everything and was really clean. And so, yeah, I was reading the World Coffee Atlas on Mexico, and one of the funniest things I came across was that at the like bottom corner of each page or of each like country, it's like there's like flavor notes for that country, you know. And with Mexico, it was basically like, it's kind of everything. it's a little bit of everything, like, you know, and it did kind of nod to like known for more of its like earthy dark chocolates and things like that. But like, it was very much like, you know, Mexico kind of does it all. And that's, I think, one of the cool things about the origin is you can find a little bit of everything.
In my reading, it seemed like a lot of the coffees, like the farms, are not big enough to put out a whole lot themselves, and that they all get sold in these co-ops, like multiple farms together.
Yeah. I mean, like this coffee is from a 1700 member co-op.
Right.
So like, that's not small. I mean, although on Broadsheet's website, it says it's a selection, like a lot from the co-op. So maybe they are like narrowing that 1700, but yeah, it does sound like that's the easiest way to export out of Mexico. I don't know a lot of the ins and outs about that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. You would think it consistently falls between like the 8th and 10th highest volume producer in the world.
Right.
So like, you would think they'd have a lot more infrastructure for export and that kind of thing. But there's a kind of interesting history behind it, where it was in like the 1920s, a lot of the land got sold back to indigenous farmers. And so if I had to guess, it's people in the higher levels of government trying to keep indigenous farmers kind of away from the exporting process that created this situation where there are these larger co-ops. And that's just kind of like looking at the facts we have, that's what I would assume. I mean, travel in Mexico can be really dangerous, right?
For
like,
sure.
I mean, there's a lot of cartel activity down there.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot like what you see in Africa now, where like the travel between DRC or Uganda, Ethiopia, all these countries is so fraught now that like the yields are coming in lower and lower because people just can't get
product. You can't move the product around.
So if you have a larger body that can offer maybe even some kind of security, or even just the security of being around more people, you know, having a larger operation, or maybe that puts like a larger target on you. I don't see, it's things like this that, you know, you never really know, but the way it's panned out, I would guess it's like, you know, there's a little bit of the anti-indigenous thing, and then they can control the export process a little more through like larger co-ops. But
right.
I'd have to look into it a lot more to verify that. It's just it's a story you see played out at a lot of Origins, right? In one form or another. So,
and I'd say that's a very logical conclusion for sure. But I think that that point of that this is, you know, maybe a smaller lot of a bigger co-op, but it does, to me, I think the tasting notes are apt. It's not particularly fruity. It's not particularly anything other than those rounded, nutty, earthy,
exactly,
brewed marshmallow, like very pleasant, no off notes. I'd say it's
the aftertaste especially is really nice. Like it feels like I just finished like a plate of pancakes or something, you know, like there's very maple-y kind of aftertaste that I like. It's very pleasant.
And it does have that citric acid to it, lemon or orange or something in there as well, a little bit there on the undertone.
Yeah, it's very subtle.
Yeah, super subtle.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's just this is one that if you don't want to think about it too much, you just want to drink a good quality coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the kind of specialty coffee where I wouldn't be thrilled with every day, but if I have it, I'm like, you know what, this is very enjoyable.
Yeah, and that's the whole single origin thing too. Like, I don't want to have the same thing every day, you know, but like I love that this shows up every so often in the rotation there, just as having that, it's like junk food almost, right? Like,
yeah, and I think this is like the best version of that. This is the grown-up version that has like maybe a few more whole grains and few more fibers and maybe a few buzzwords.
Yeah, it's the cereal without the sugar.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that everyone's selling that I can't say because they don't sponsor our podcast.
No,
they sponsor our podcast.
Also, probably not one with egg whites in it. So like we can bypass that whole nonsense. but no, this is very enjoyable. And I apologize for diving right in. I didn't let everybody else do their weeks because I was talking so much.
I'm good. I'm good. Oh, no, gosh. I'm happy to be talking about it.
Yeah, this is delightful. And again, Broadsheet, I've had a bunch of their coffees, both at Ugly Duck and otherwise. Just a consistently quality place that I would definitely recommend people check out for sure.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to read was there was an article, I think it was Daily News, Coffee Daily News, or Perfect Daily Grind that had something about multi-roasters and making sure they choose quality coffee. And, you know, this comes from Ugly Duck that rotates things and has had really good things. And I just curious how they end up with some of these, you know.
I wonder at some point how much they get reached out to.
A ton.
I was going to say it has to be.
Yeah. I'm told it's just like samples all the time. And like anytime I have something interesting, I'm wanting to share it with as many people as I can. I take it to Ugly and it's just like goes in a box that is piling over with a million samples. Yeah, you have to be super aggressive. I would say that this is one thing I'm slowly learning is you do just have to put things out into the world and account for that in your costs, which aren't going down. So
I will going up. I will say that when I was there in early January, I was talking to, you know, a couple of people behind the counter. It's like, oh yeah, I just had this, you know, one of the shops in our town has it. Like, oh, what's the shop? I'm like, oh, good. Like, yeah, I've been packing tons of boxes. But like that mattered, like that amount of coffee that Ugly Duck is going through is noticeable by a lot of
absolutely.
These small roasters. And that makes a big impact on a roaster like that. That's an impactful thing that they're focusing on them.
Absolutely. But
how many bags do you think they sell when they bring in like a broadsheet or
I've
whatever?
Seen that shelf go through three or four times.
They
now.
Tend to get weekly. So I mean, and that's just stuff off the shelf. Like there's all the larger bags too. I don't know what I'm
sure we're
privy.
Guessing.
I don't know what I'm privy to share.
Sure.
But like at one point Ugly Duck was Gimme's second largest wholesale account. So like,
oh wow,
you know, like it is very significant, not just for small roasters, but for someone of Gimme's size too, which, you know, Gimme has gone through a few contractions throughout the year. They're smaller now than they were when Ugly Duck opened, but like, it's still like, just to give you an idea, like even someone as established as Gimme, like Ugly makes a huge impact. So
that's so crazy. Awesome. That one little shop can affect so many things.
Yeah,
and
the guy
do is coffee. I just want to reiterate that.
Yeah, the guy knew right away what I was talking about. I was like, oh, I've been packing boxes all the time. I'm like, yeah, that's but that I'm like, yeah, that matters. And that's it's really cool.
Yeah.
It was really cool that I got to like, you know, say thanks to them and say, hey, yeah, we're enjoying your coffee in our town.
That's awesome. Yeah. So Aaron, what is driving the interest in Mexico? What do we have left time wise? A couple minutes?
Yeah, I think so. We got about five. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the first half.
I mean, the interest in Mexico, honestly, you know, I wish I had had more time to dive in. My week took off from me. And so, you know, I was planning to dive in a little bit more to the, you know, agriculture area there and that type of stuff. It was honestly just like, I like Mexican coffee. Yeah. And so this popped up.
Well, were you just
up.
There?
That, that's yep, more that where also. I was going. I mean, I was in fake Mexico.
Okay.
So I had the lovely experience of attending an all-inclusive resort.
Okay.
And so like we flew in and we're in real Mexico in the airport, which I haven't traveled internationally short of Canada in a long time and forgot what that's like to get off the airplane and walk through all of that.
Mm-hmm. Is it better or worse now?
Well, it's just like this whole thing about like all these people trying to like – called the Shark Tank. They're trying to sell you timeshares and get you into these.
Ugh.
They'll even get you into a taxi cab and take you to a building, not because they want to abduct you or anything, but like they want to isolate you for sales. You know,
they don't not want to abduct you.
If that's what it takes, that's probably what they're gonna do.
So. It's just interesting. And then, you know, being, you know, an American in a foreign country, I'm sure at this point is just an experience. And it was, you know, as well there, you know, when we were out in, you know, real Mexico, so to speak. But my brother-in-law, his family is from Mexico City also. And at one point when I was... in between jobs or out of work or something, I was like, you know what? I have a friend whose father retired and bought a coffee farm in Honduras. And of course that's sitting in the back of my head and I got let go from this job. I was like, you know what? I want to get a coffee farm in Mexico. And I called up my brother-in-law's dad and I said,
like,
hey,
you do,
you know what, how much, money would I need for the Federales and the cartels to have a coffee shop? He goes, where? I go, maybe a Waka. He goes, ooh, way too much. So I don't know. It's just a thing. And it's right there, right? Like we can get to Mexico fairly easily.
Doesn't feel that far away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Did you enjoy the resort experience though? I've been very reticent to even try because it doesn't seem like my kind of thing, but I kind of wonder, like, do you enjoy that?
So my wife and I like to travel. We've been to the world, you know, in a bunch of different places, you know, before kids and a little bit with the kids now.
Report in here. Aaron has been to the world.
That slipped out of my mouth. I'm like,
you've
freaking
been
Chris.
World.
Achievement unlocked.
Yeah. Been to the world.
Seen world.
Where was I going?
I love world.
So like
world. It's like the only Anchorman joke I could say to my kids. I love lamp.
But my wife likes to plan what I call trips. So we went to Italy and we were busy every single day. Like we left the apartment at, you know, morning and we didn't get back till after, you know, sun had set and it was late and the kids were a mess. Right. And so I was like, I want a vacation where I can get drunk on a beach. Like, I just want to lie around. I want to let the kids swim. Like, I want to read a book maybe, you know? So we went here and of course we got there and they wanted to sell us a membership to this resort. Which,
of course,
you know, they were like, we'll give you free stuff. So we went and did the little spiel and then it turned it into a trip. And mm-hmm. So I took the son golfing. I don't golf, so that was fun. We did go deep sea fishing.
Okay.
And that was really cool. We had local guides and it was a local company. they took us out. Then they brought us to this Isla Mujeres. We had lunch there and walked around that little area, which was great. And then, you know, other than that, we were on the resort and it was just room service. And I had every single random resort drink that you can think of. And it was, everybody should do it once just to say it if you can. Like,
yeah, I'm very reticent because I very much like my ability to
just because that doesn't sound like travel the way you describe it.
No,
I just love that. I like the flexibility of discovery, but you know, as an outsider, there's something to me that's very enjoyable about that discovery. I get to learn about a place in more detail, and yeah, I might have some lows that I messed up or I didn't quite get right.
Sure.
But then it's on me. Then I have made the choice. I've made the decision to have something. And if I fail, then, hey, I didn't do that right. But I do like that control over... I like the control over the situation.
Yeah.
And I also don't want, like, I don't drink, even on vacation, I don't drink every day. But if I want something, I want it to be on purpose, something I want.
Yeah.
And I want to find, oh, this place does this great. Or, oh, I went to this brewery and it was mid, but I tried. I tried to find something that was really good. But that's like, my joy is that like I find something exceptional through that journey versus it's everything and I don't have to think at all.
Yeah.
Like anytime Carrie's taking a nap, I'm like, Google Maps, Google Maps, Google Maps, Google Maps. It is just all the time. But I'm constantly searching.
What a great synergy for your vacation.
Oh, you know what?
It's like while you're sleeping, I'm entertaining myself thinking about all the things I'm going to make you do when you wake up.
100%. And it's like, but I started doing that when like, hey, that's how she wants to relax and enjoy herself. And hey, her being well rested and not worrying about things is great. And I get to be an obsessive nerd and do that.
I did have one thing I needed to point out. So we were at Moon Palace Cancun.
Okay.
I was one of the only crappy parts was, so we had these passes to one of the other like hotel properties. So you could walk there. It was like a quarter mile. We went over, took the kids to the water park there. And in walking through their hotel complex, there was a coffee place. And it was closed at the time. And I went back and looked it up and it was about Mexican coffee. It wasn't like a hotel coffee shop. It was like a tasting experience. And I finally like got around to like figuring out when it was open and I could not make it back there before. They were only open such a limited time. And it was like, this was the thing that really needed to do, and I didn't find it till the last day.
That hurts.
So if you're there, because they talked about bringing in coffees from all over the region and different roasts and everything else, it was really impressive that it was being offered in that vicinity. So
cool.
Yeah, so does that do it for part one? Because I've been looking up a bunch of stats about Mexico, and I think a really interesting lens on Mexico is the Cup of Excellence.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I would love to talk about that in part two.
Sounds good. I think we'll either take a break we'll take a break. We'll be right back with more Mexico coffee.
On Getting Real with Bossy, we celebrate the courage, grit, and brilliance of business owners without pretending the journey is flawless.
These are bold, energizing, and unfiltered conversations about the wins, lessons, and the moments that shape us.
We are honest, uplifting, and full of the kind of connection every entrepreneur deserves.
If you're ready for real talk that fuels you, subscribe to Getting Real with Bossy.
Be bold.
Be brave.
Be the boss and subscribe.
Bring us back in.
Welcome back. I was expecting music.
I was expecting music too.
Oh, what a garbage job.
You know what I'm going to do?
Hold on, just play it now.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it in. I'm going to put it in post. I'm going to add music so that we sound even dumber.
And welcome back to the Level Up Podcast. I'm Wade
what
Reed.
What podcast? What podcast are we on?
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
That was a slip.
What a... I thought you were so prepared for today.
Dialed
you
brought us all the way in.
You brought us Mexican coffee. We're drinking it. We're enjoying it. And then that happens. Like, our break was longer than is typical. Usually our breaks are artificial and about 2 minutes long.
Well, and I think we're all intimidated by the level of talent and skill we just witnessed. So one take.
Man,
someday I'll come in to do a read.
Oh, please.
And do one take.
No, you got to do it because I only know her name's Jackie.
Oh, shout out to Jackie McGriff from the Our Voices Project and the Representation in Cinema podcast right here on the Lunch with Our Podcast Network. She showed up, did a read in exactly the time frame, dead perfect the first time. I'm like, God damn, what a
awesome.
Professional.
Yeah. Yep. And then
she's the best.
We can't even work our cues out.
She literally could have been
and
walked in the door.
Still talking about it. Yeah.
She literally could have walked in the door and walked out in like 40 seconds.
I would have loved that. Just walk in, walk out, and just like bam.
Didn't they do that on The Simpsons where she's gonna record her lines for the doll and then Krusty comes in and does his and they haven't even like threaded in like the tape to record him? All right, we're ready for you, Krusty, and he's already gone.
Bam.
Back to coffee.
So, second coffee from Mexico. This is the Onyx you were talking about.
Yeah. So, if you missed part one, we had a broadsheet from Chiapas. This is a fellow drop. So, fellow's take on Onyx, Mexico?
No, this is still Onyx coffee. So.
It's Onyx. They roasted it, but.
Yeah, but it's not customized to them. It's just unique to how they sell it. But you know, it's always nice to see Onyx stuff. It's consistently very good. And the nice thing about, you know, what I'll say is as somebody who has essentially a fellow setup in their kitchen.
Oh, you're beating me to it.
So I've got the, you know, the kettle, I've got the, you know, the Ode to grinder. And I also now have the, fellow Aiden, coffee brewer system. And that's what we made this on because it gives us lots of information.
Yeah. So the other thing I was going to bring up too was the Onyx packaging is intense. It came in a cardboard box labeled. Then it had another cardboard box that the coffee was on in the inside, which is all branded.
Yeah, with a lot of different branding.
A lot of different branding. There's some iridescent sticker on here.
So this is kind of funny. I don't mean to read the stage notes, but hold it up to your camera, man.
Oh.
Oh, let me switch to Aaron. Look at that. Ooh.
So here's the boring box.
This is box number one.
And I knew what happened when I came here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's the branding box.
It is pretty slick. I like that printing style. It does look really good.
I don't know if you can see the iridescent snake on the back that's there.
No, that's pretty cool.
And then in there is their coffee bag, which is also labeled. I cannot, for the life of me, that's a lot of money in packaging.
For sure.
Like, I know their coffee's good and they're a big deal, but that's a lot of money in packaging. Is it needed?
I don't, yeah, sure. If you have the money, I mean, we should do everything we can to treat the coffee more nicely, I guess. I really love that clear bag, except that, like, if you set that on your counter and light's getting through, but I mean, maybe it's not that big a deal if it's not, you know, like direct sunlight in a window. But
for
like,
sure.
Yeah. I see how it's unique, and I imagine that's like compostable or something. Does it say anything on there? Like,
I kind of imagine.
Yeah,
if
I would have
doing
to guess.
That.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, that's, well, I mean, yeah.
Because like if you're buying it there, like their boxes, because they do a lot of different, you know, colors and different style designs, you know, that there's a consistency and maybe that internal bag is the same every time. So they're only doing that one style. And then the outside is where they do the labeling and packaging.
Yeah.
So, you know, that maybe they can do that affordably and do that way. But regardless, I mean, I think we've all had Onyx coffees before
mm-hmm.
and I've always had a good experience.
This is actually my first.
Is it really?
That's why I was jumped on it when I saw it.
Yeah, because I've had a few both at multi roasters and other locations. I've never been to one of their actual spots. But setting up on the Aiden was really easy. You sent me a link.
I was gonna say, tell me what it did, because I knew you had the Aiden, and I was like, oh, this will be perfect to talk about that a little bit. What was it like when you got the link and everything?
Yeah, so this is my first time using one of the provided profiles. So with the Fellow Drops, if you buy one of those, it sends you the profile, and you can just download it to the machine. Say how much you want, tells you how many coffee beans to put in, what grind range, and I ran it, and I just hit the button, and that's it. It does their profile for what they want this experience to be.
That's so good.
Which I think is really cool. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because I have a profile I've set up that I use fairly generically. I don't really dial it in for any of the coffees I use. I kind of just use the same recipe. But it's nice that they made a choice for me. And if I like it or not, I like that they made a choice for me and that this is the way we think it's best. And they set up on that machine at their shop, which means they've at least say, hey, we think this works good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's cool.
Well, and the last time we were talking about, I think I asked Wade, you know, if you get an expensive coffee, how do you go about not wasting it to, you know, dial it in, so to speak, without making a ton of brews? And so that was one of the things I looked. Both of these had roaster provided recipes.
Yeah.
Also.
And I think that's, you know, that's obviously one, like, quite a few levels removed from, you know, we're the company that actually made your brewer and we can tell you exactly how to program it, you know. But it is, but that's, I think, a thing that roasters, like good roasters, do pretty well. Is providing some insight about this is the best way to brew this and this home grinder, this setting, this, you know, again, like all the parameters you gave. So, and something that I'm not real good about, cause I'm like, I don't know, it's good coffee, drink it.
Yeah. And I'll say, like, I'd say this is a very well dialed in recipe. You know, it's a little bouncier than our last one. The body's a little bit lighter. I would say it still lives in that, you know, in between milk and dark chocolate zone. Maybe you're getting a little bit of extra fruit and herbal, but it kind of lives in that comfort world of Mexican coffee again.
Yeah, it doesn't, there aren't any flavor notes.
I was just looking on the box for that, and yeah.
None on the website. Interesting.
I would say this is, it's a lighter bodied version of what we had before. But I say in a really pleasant way, I like this quite a bit, but again, it lives in that I would drink it and not think much about it.
Sure.
And say, this was a good coffee, but not one I would purposely go back to because I like weirder more than comfort. I definitely like exploring more than comfort, yeah, which we kind of touched on in the first half.
Exactly. Exactly. And
we're going to drop Chris off in the middle of nowhere. With a really double anaerobic washed, thermo-shocked co-ferment.
I feel great about it. It's going to be awesome. But I'm kind of intrigued because you're actually doing some extra research, Wade.
I got really interested in Mexico coffee. I think, you know, it's mostly a volume game there. I don't think of Mexican coffees as fetching particularly high prices in general. And so where I went with that was I was wondering what like a typical like cup of excellence coffee sells for in Mexico, right? Like and I know that's kind of an outrageous gauge, but it does give you an idea. I think the numbers are interesting enough that they give you an idea for what I'm talking about, where they don't fetch quite as high a price. So cup of excellence, which I'm sure you're about to ask about, is a group, the Alliance for Coffee Excellence goes into these coffee growing countries and they gather, you know, just literally thousands of samples and they cup and cup and cup and cup. And actually you can't apply to become a cupper, like to go and become a taster for these different competitions. And then they grade out, so everything gets scored and then they grade out, you know, winners for certain categories. And the categories are actually different country to country. I found that really interesting. So like, you'll remember like Best of Panama, you know, didn't want certain experimental. In other countries, like Guatemala, for instance, there's an experimental category.
Huh.
And there might be one, is there? Yeah, and in Mexico too, experimental. And so you get a little less information about those coffees, but it just, it was really fascinating to me to see that like other countries, you know, Guatemala, or sorry, Panama made a huge splash, but other countries are like, nah, let's do the rational thing and section this off and just say, among these coffees, there are good and bad examples. So that was really interesting. But the number one, the highest... Okay, sorry. So they host these competitions and then they hold auctions for the winners.
Okay.
And usually it's like top 10 or 11. I'm seeing most of these go to 10 or 11, get auctioned off, and they fetch these, just, these are the coffees that, you know, get the $2,000 a pound in Panama, right?
My favorite coffee goes to 11.
Yes, exactly. So we've never used 11 before. We've never gone to 11 before. But so, these are like, yeah, in Panama, you're talking about like the Black Jaguar Geisha that we had, you know, or that we talked about. We didn't have it. We talked about going for like $2,000 a pound. In Mexico, they're like breaking records in 2025 for their highest auctioned COE coffee ever. Do you want to guess how much it sold for? A pound.
I'm going to say 20%, $400 a pound.
Okay.
I was going to go up towards 700 just to...
Okay. In Mexico, the highest selling coffee sold for $71 a pound.
Holy cow.
What?
Isn't that wild?
See, I mean, this is why I like Mexican coffee.
$71 a pound. And I mean, there are just all kinds of fascinating things here. These are the traditional wash process coffees. Were the highest sellers in Mexico.
Okay.
So like not the experimentals. The experimentals were quite a bit lower. We'll talk about that in a second. But and then variety wise, it's almost all Geisha, which like Mexico's not known for. Huh. There's this hybrid variety called Ana Cafe 14 that is the Timor hybrid with Pacamara. So, I mean, I don't even know what to think of that. And Mexico, I started looking through as much as I could. Mexico is one of the only countries that doesn't have like a traditional variety category, but still has among its top 10, one coffee that is just Típica and Caturra.
Great.
And I'm just like blown away. If you go to Guatemala, they actually section off. These are our traditional varieties, and the Típicas, the Caturras, the Bourbons, right?
Yeah.
And they actually list on the Mexico or on the Guatemala COE what all the different varieties are. But the highest scoring traditional variety COE in Guatemala was like $14, $15. Huh. And at auction, this Típica Caturra was the eighth most expensive COE coffee. Or no, sorry, it finished eighth. It was not the eighth most expensive. In terms of expense, it's more like fifth. And it was $28.60 per pound, which is like, I mean, still very expensive. That's a great price. And the lot... That lot ends up being worth to its producer, you know, like $9,500. And it's not a huge lot, but so it's still really good. But think of like a Típica, a Caturra. Like I could go out and buy Típicas and Caturras for like $7 a pound. That would just be excellent. This is fetching that kind of price.
Yeah.
So like Mexico is real. It's fascinating because it's like, I just don't think you're going to find that anywhere else. And then all their experimentals were from $38 a pound down to $13 a pound. So like their experimentals are just not competing in this market because of what everyone seems to expect from a Mexico. It's just, it's clean. It's this, it's what we've had. It's straightforward. It's not challenging. And so it's an interesting limitation, I think, but also just what a fascinating, a Típica and Caturra. That blew my mind. I was just like, there's nothing more common than Caturra.
Can I ask a question that might not have and almost definitely doesn't have an easy answer? So we talk about, you know, I would say, you know, origin, and we talk about, in this case, this would be our terroir in wine terminology. Do you know the reason why? Is it the land? Is it the varietals in how it's grown? Is it elevation? Why do we see such relative consistency in style through the country, which is vast when it comes to, you know, the geography, even from where it's grown in Mexico, is very different because there's, you know, Oaxaca is very mountainous, right? You're getting pretty good elevation there. So you're getting different stuff, but there seems to be a unified feel to Mexican coffee that we've talked about. Do you have a reason why that is? Or have you looked into that?
I could think of a couple. The variety spread in Mexico is actually pretty tight. Like Típica is everywhere in Mexico. Via Sarchi and Sarchi Moores and other Cadimore hybrids are also really common. Cadimore is Catura and the East Timor hybrid, and it was bred to survive in harsh climates. And that's another kind of interesting wrinkle. In Mexico, you're getting up towards that latitude where it gets really hard to grow a lot of coffee.
Okay.
There's not as much of the mountain that you can use. But what's the other interesting, you know, thing with that is then you get these 900 meters above sea level coffees that in other origins would be considered pretty bad that come out in Mexico pretty well because they still experience pretty dramatic temperature swing because of the latitude. So, I would say that it is unique because of how far north it is. It is unique because the variety spread is pretty tight. I'm actually kind of surprised to see Geshas on the list at COE Mexico. When I've not had a Gesha from Mexico. I've not heard of a Gesha from Mexico. I don't think I've ever had one either.
I've had a decent amount from different countries. I mean, I can think of at least three or four different countries I've had it from over the years, at least probably five different countries I've had it from.
So those are kind of the structural limitations. Honestly, going back to our previous conversation, the fact that there are groups of producers who have to kind of group up in co-ops to sell to export, that's going to flatten a lot. You know, maybe you have a super unique coffee, but if you're one of 1,700 producers selling in, you know, a given lot out of this co-op, maybe that's going to have an effect where, you're together with all these Típicas and Caturas and whatever you have it fades into the background. So it's part of it, but I think there's just a marketing thing. Like I look at the names of the companies that buy these COE lots and they are these like super specialized, honestly, mostly South Korean and Japanese companies. There are a lot of Australian companies. There are a lot of New Zealand, UK, and there are some US too, but, these are companies that are so specifically marketing something that if you go to the average consumer and say, Mexico, it's got too much already of that. Like, well, this is limited kind of baggage to it. So I think they have a marketing problem. I think like people need to kind of step outside. It's like James Hoffman said, Mexico can actually kind of taste like everything. And that's just not at all the perception.
Well, it's the same with Mexican food too.
Like, right.
Mexican food is everything.
Right.
And it's like, it's not a unified thing. It's certainly not Taco Bell. But
it doesn't lend itself to an identity. I mean, at least in coffee, if you're everything, then you're nothing.
I mean, it's also like Mexico is so large north to south.
Yeah.
And the regionality is so distinct, just like India. It's so regionally distinct that like the cuisine is so varied, and it makes sense that the coffee would be varied as well. Like I've had, and shout out to Joe Bean, sponsor of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network, like the Oaxacan coffee you had from them recently, that one is different because it's from a smaller group of places.
Exactly.
That it can be more distinct. And I love that we can taste something like that still. But I think you're right that the aggregation flattens. But that's what everything is, right? If you have a huge group of anything, it tends to get flattened out. You lose the extremes.
Yeah. And I don't know where, you know, I have a little bit more of a bearing on where governments stand and the roles that they play in, in other countries, especially like in a Colombia, in a Guatemala, you know, Ethiopia, places like that, the government's really clear. I think just the fact that I don't know where the Mexican government is at vis-a-vis the coffee trade kind of tells me a lot. You know what I mean? Like, that's there's fair. Probably plenty going on that's holding that back. I mean, I assume all governments are holding all agricultural industries back, unfortunately. But I think just the fact that you don't hear like, yeah, you know, they regulate these things or they help farmers in these ways, the way that you do it, a few other origins probably means that part of the problem is just that, like, you know, people are finding it hard to get around regulations or they have to grease certain palms just to make certain relationships work in Mexico. So I don't know. It'd be an interesting conversation with Jobin, I'm sure, to hear like how they found this one. That was it their Good Food Award coffee?
I think, I forget if it did or not. I mean, let's just say this. It was, I would say, as somebody who drinks a fair amount of different coffees, it was pretty special. And I think that's...
Is this the one from the ad read? The pineapple one?
Right? This was...
Oh, okay.
This one had more green tea flavors.
Okay, cool, yeah.
I think that was a Costa Rican coffee. Yeah, that was a Good Food Award one. But, you know, it's... I love that we can still have this conversation, want to learn more about, hey, maybe we do need to learn more about that stuff. And hey, we can make assumptions, but at some point, there's got to be some documentation about what's going on.
Sure.
Somewhere.
Somebody knows.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're going to close out. So we've had a good recording session, but any plugs you want to get out, Wade?
Industry nights every third Thursday at Ugly Duck. I think February. Is this the last one?
The last one on the schedule. On the schedule, yeah. 11th?
And I'm sure they'll do more, but yeah, they just haven't released like a future schedule. So
it's been cool so far.
Yeah, I missed the last one, unfortunately. I scheduled a private class on the same night because I'm a smart human being.
I completely forgot.
Yeah.
Had it scheduled, and my wife was like, weren't you going to a thing? I showed up late. It looked awesome. They had like a bunch of different coffees from local roasters.
Yeah, so I had sent some coffee to them for that. So that's I'm excited about those. I don't have anything Aporia specific at this exact moment, but shout out, look up a Fauve coffee, FAUVE. Yeah. We've got a drop coming in February. It's going to be our special wine yeast maceration Pacamara. Which I'm super excited about. That comes from our friends at Gold Mountain in Nicaragua. So, and Billy's just doing some cool things. I think we're going to do like an art gallery in the warehouse. So,
let's talk more about that. Yeah. We'll talk more about that whole project, you know, when we get there.
Yeah, I know he wants to come on. So
that'd be awesome. Aaron, anything you got?
Not at the moment. I'm focused on schooling and making things with kids. So that's been it.
All right. Well, that sounds great. And appreciate everybody joining us for more Dialed In on the Lunch Order Podcast Network. You know, stay tuned for some more announcements coming up. Coming up in February, you'll hear ads for WXXI's Connections on the Lunch Order Podcast Network. This is our introduction, partnership with the team over there on their podcast. So you hear our ads over there as well. Really cool to see them, you know, working through the community and, you know, as people who've been on the show multiple times, it's an important program for Rochester and the surrounding areas. So if you're not listening to Connections already, what are you doing? Check it out. We'll be back next time on the Lunch Hour Podcast Network with more
Dialed In.
This has been a presentation of the Lunch Hour Podcast Network.
The only thing I demand is that we do not cut the awkward intro to the second part of this episode.
It's negotiable.